You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Toi Te Mana, an Indigenous history of Māori art, is a landmark account in words and pictures of Māori art by Māori art historians Professor Deirdre Brown, Ngā Pui, Ngāti Kahu, and Associate Professor Ngarino Ellis, Ngā Pui, Ngāti Poro, with the late Jonathan Mane Fioki, Ngā Pui, Te Opoeri, Ngāti Kuri. Published last month, the authors explore a wide field of art practice from the arrival of Pacific voyagers 800 years ago to complementary artists in Aotearoa and around the world today. As co-author Ngarino Ellis noted in an interview with Te Ao Māori News about the book, this is talking about our history, celebrating our history, and how fantastic our artists were. We had lots of different kinds of values, but most of all, it was about aroha for our art, aroha for taonga tuku iho, aroha for our communities, aroha for our pākeke, and for our artists. Sophia had a kōrero with co-author Deirdre Brown about Toi Te Mana, its contents, and the significance of the book.
So you've worked on this book with Ngarino Ellis and Jonathan Mane Fioki. I wanted to start by asking you a bit about each of your backgrounds firstly. Do you want to speak to maybe your own research first and then maybe a little bit about Ellis's and Mane Fioki's?
Oh, kia ora. Yes, so I am currently a professor of architecture at the University of Auckland Waipapa Taumaturau. So I trained in architecture, I did a master's and PhD in it. And when I finished my PhD, which was on the history of Māori architecture, I got a job at the University of Canterbury teaching Māori art history. And that was where I met Jonathan Mane Fioki, because at that point he was quite senior in his own career. He was an expert in European art. But he was also responsible for kicking off the teaching of Māori art history in the South Island. And so I was under his mentorship for 6 years while I worked there, taught Māori art history, and then came back to Auckland 2003 to teach at the School of Architecture and Planning. And I'm currently Deputy Dean of the faculty there. So my background is that I work in Māori art and architectural history. Jonathan's background, as I mentioned, he trained as a painter and then went on to get an art history degree at the Courtauld in London, which is the place to go if you want to teach and research European art. And then he came back to Aotearoa, New Zealand. He is Ngā Pui. All three of us are Ngā Pui. And in the 1970s, you know, he really kind of reclaimed that identity and was one of the first to teach Māori art history at a university. In the north, that was taught by Ngahuia Te Awa Kōtuku, who was a professor here at the University of Auckland in the Department of Art History, and that's where Ngarino trained. So she did a double degree in law and art history and became an art historian through that route. And about the same time I got my appointment at Canterbury, that would have been 1997, she was appointed teacher of Māori art history at the University of Auckland. So in a nutshell, that's our backgrounds.
Beautiful. And this book has been a long time coming for you guys. You've been working on it for years. What was kind of the impetus for deciding to write Toi Te Mana?
Well, we all found ourselves on the same campus, this campus at the University of Auckland, about 12 years ago. Jonathan was appointed as head of Elam School of Fine Arts, so he had come up. He'd actually worked for in between Canterbury and here for a number of years at Te Papa. And we were sitting, because we all knew each other, we were sitting around in the business school cafe one day talking about how we'd each been asked to write books on the history of Māori art, but never quite gotten around to it because it's such a big undertaking. And then naturally, we all thought, why don't we all write one collectively? And that's where it started. And we've got very, very excited about the idea. It would be from Polynesian arrival right up to the present day. It would cover a diverse range of art forms, and most importantly, it would be from a Māori perspective, so quite different to the canon of Western art. So it would have to be written and thought about quite differently.
100%. And you kind of spoke to it a little bit there, but this book is a landmark account of Māori art from tūpuna to the present. It's over 600 pages long and covers a lot, from ancestral weavers to contemporary artists at the Venice Biennale, from whare whakairo to film, and from Te Puia Herangi to Michael Parakowhai. The scope is amazing. Would you be able to maybe speak to some of the key areas the book focuses on?
So we try and deal with as much as we can as possible. There are inevitably some people that we might have left out, but we wanted to be as comprehensive as possible. And the way of dealing with that material, because that is a lot of material and it is a very large book, was that we thought of it in three kete, you know, the three baskets of knowledge. Mm. So the first kete, kete tuatea, we are looking at what might be termed customary Māori art. So some of those arts that you've just described before. But we didn't want to kind of isolate them as being in the past, which sometimes happens in art histories, particularly Western style art histories, but to actually show that they are being practiced and have currency now, and they are ever developing within themselves. So you'll see everything from the deep ancestral past up until this current point of time, contemporary makers. Then we have another kete, Te Kete Tuuri, which looks at the art that occurred after European influence. So often this is articulated as kind of like fatal impact. That's a term that's sometimes described, that Europeans arrived and all the arts died out. Mm. But when you do a deep dive into it, you'll see that there's new materials, new ideas, new concepts, and certainly there are challenges, and we have chapters that deal with, say, for example, the impact of Christianity, and we also deal with the New Zealand wars. But out of that evolve new arts, which are stronger. And so that kete really looks at the idea of self-determination within Māori art from about the early 19th century into the mid-20th century.
Mm.
And then our last kete looks at what might be termed the contemporary period. And we really didn't want to start with modernism, which is where a lot of Western art histories start when it comes to the contemporary period. Mm. Instead, we look towards our own people. And we were right, that basket starts with Te Puia Hirangi from the Kingitanga, Sir Apirana Ngata, who founded the School of Māori Arts and Crafts, and also Tahu Potiki Wiramu Ratana, the head of the Ratana Church, and their self-determination movements. And they had these glorious buildings and sort of new forms of art and revived forms of art as well. And underpinning this was this idea of Māori self-determination, but also survival, in which was quite a challenging period, the early 20th century for Māori people. And then from there, we have Jonathan was able to mostly complete a chapter on modernism. Mm. So we talk about Māori artists being trained in Western art schools and how they combine that with their own cultural systems. And then a series of chapters that kind of chart the movements of contemporary Māori art through sequences of exhibitions. And an important thing for us was our definition of Māori art. So Māori art for us is Māori art, or is art made by Māori people.
Mm.
And others might have different definitions of that. Others might say, you know, Hirini Mukilmead will say, you need to have something visibly Māori in it. We say, no, as long as someone has whakapapa, their work is Māori art.
Mm.
So that chapter's interesting because there, or sorry, that kete is interesting because there is a chapter on Māori art in Australia and Western Europe where there are diasporic populations.
Mm.
And, you know, that they are in themselves their own communities doing their own things. And we try to bring the book bang up to date. We were very, very lucky, just slipped in Mata Aho Collective's Golden Lion 2024 Venice Biennale right at the end of the book.
Oh, beautiful. What an incredible scope. It's insane. And I love that you spoke about all the different kete, because I was going to mention that something that Dr. Maya Nuku, the Oceana curator at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, noted about Toi Te Mana is that the format with key chapters split into these three sections, kete, which each focus on a distinct time period. It works so well to drive the kaupapa of the book forward, giving a broadly chronological framework, which nevertheless emphasises non-linearity, dynamism and change. Would you be able to expand on this comment? How has the chosen format and structure reinforced the kaupapa of this book?
It's a very good question. One of the things that we had to deal with very early on as art historians is that history in the Western sense is very linear.
Mm.
Books are linear too. You start them at the beginning and you read through to the end, although you'd be quite challenged with this book because it's over 600 pages. But you know, how to reflect the cyclical nature of Māori time. And we've done this in each of the kete, but particularly that first one where we're dealing with customary arts, because the arts are being reinvented, but they always go back to ancestral beginnings. And this idea of the ancestors are always with us, hawaiki is a continuing concept, it's not something that belongs in the past. So the kete helped us to kind of create our own structures that represented understandings of time, Māori understandings of time.
Beautiful. To kind of add on to that, the deployment of tribal traditions, stories, chants and whakatauki to introduce chapters and sections is also notable in this piece. How would, does this reinforce the kaupapa of Toitumana as well?
We come from an oral tradition where you normally will start with a pepeha or a whakatauki. So that was really important to us for bringing mana to each of the chapters. These are other people's words, their work. So each of those are really important for kind of starting to set the scene of the chapter. So we've got everything. And in one of my chapters, I've got Dean Hapita, you know, incredible contemporary musician, very powerful lyrics. He very kindly said that I could use his lyrics in the book to start off a chapter on urban Māori art and architecture. Back to ancestral whakatauki as well. We've got other forms, you know, song making, a beautiful, we've got poetry that we've quoted from as well. Robert Sullivan. So these words from others are really important for setting the scene for each of those chapters. And also we feel it's a more Māori way of introducing our mahi.
100%. And to kind of add on to what you were saying before about how you three have decided to define Māori art, this is not to say that Māori art is one thing. This book examines a broad range of art practices. But in covering such a large span of time, what do you think can be said about how Māori practices and art have changed over time? Big question.
It's really interesting because, you know, we did all that work and we covered all those centuries, including the ancestral past, which, you know, you can't even put a time amount on it. And we found three key things that appear across all kete, and, you know, most artists are trying to deal with them, or one or two or all three in their work. And that is whenua, whakapapa and tikanga. So it's quite easy to imagine how those themes are dealt with in customary Māori art. You know, it's fundamental to its creation, materials, audience, everything. Then, you know, in that third kete, we're looking at artists, particularly in the 1990s, who are of Māori descent. They go to art school. They are living far away from their tribe. They don't know so much about their ancestry. But even then, if you look in their art, you can find a longing for a connection back to a home, which might be on a different motu, for example. You find an interest in being able to reclaim tikanga. And you find this idea that they are dealing with their own whakapapa through that process. And it's interesting looking at those artists, you know, looking at artists like Peter Robinson, for example, in the early to mid-1990s, and Shane Cotton kind of grappling with those issues in their work. But actually the book charts their trajectories as well. You know, that was part of a journey for them. And I think this is the great thing that art offers all of us, really. We can explore our own identity, the settings that we're in, and our work changes over time. And it's really interesting looking at the emerging Māori artists now. There was the Toi Tū Toi Ora exhibition at Auckland Art Gallery
in recent
years, which was fantastic. And in that, you can see this new generation of Māori artists. You know, many of them have te reo Māori, they're firm in their tikanga, they know where they're from. Those sorts of things that people were longing for, you know, two, 3 decades before, it's all there for them. And they have these incredible platforms to explore other kinds of ideas in their work too.
Yeah, 100%. To add on to what you were saying there about Toi Tū Toi Ora, it was a landmark survey show at the Auckland Art Gallery in 2020. The exhibition and accompanying publication was pivotal in changing the lens on the way that Māori art is perceived. How do you think that mainstream interest and awareness about Māori art practices has changed over time?
Yeah, it's markedly changed. If you look at that modernist period that I mentioned before, you know, Jonathan Manifiuki's chapter, those artists had to work really hard to get their work into galleries and for it to be accepted as art. Mm. A lot of it had Māori content. And, you know, that's a generation, sadly, we're losing some of them now. Some of them are still with us. So they really kind of kicked open the door to the gallery. And then, you know, what we've done in the book is that we've charted, for example, the entry of Māori women, strong Māori women, into mm. the art world in the 1980s. And they become these kuia figures. So these artists really stake a space for Māori art, and particularly after the Te Māori exhibition, although that was about customary Māori art, but 1984, so, you know, that's, I'm counting it up on my head, 40 years ago now. After that, and we talk about this in the book, you couldn't really have any kind of exhibition that didn't include Māori art in it.
Mm.
I mean, that was really important, and it changed curatorial practices as well. So over the last 40 years, we've become more accustomed to Māori art being in general exhibitions, that Māori artists are being profiled. I still think that there's a lot more to do. I do worry about the low number of Māori curators that we have, but that's often a reflection of a wider issue that we have around funding for the arts in Aotearoa New Zealand. Mm. But certainly the exhibitions that we have now couldn't have been held 50 years ago.
100%. And my last question, this book is so incredible. Why is having this book and these practices documented so important, do you think?
Well, thank you for those kind kupu. I really appreciate it.
That's okay.
I mean, for us, it's a, you know, for me and Ngāi Reno and Jonathan, sadly he passed away 18 months into our project. This was our whole lives. This is an important mode of cultural expression. It's a way that people touch the land because they're using products from the land. It's how they establish a sense of place. You know, we deal with things, for example, such as the marae and the whare nui and how important they are to Māori cultural identity. We wrap that into the narrative of art. And although there is language, I don't think that you have a culture without art as well.
Mm.
So the art gives expression to te reo, it gives expression to political changes, it gives expression to spirituality. You don't have a culture without art. And we feel very privileged that we have been granted this opportunity. Auckland University Press, our publisher, has really pushed the boat out on the production of this book and realised it in a form that we couldn't have even imagined, to have our work presented in this way and to have so many artists and communities agree to have their work presented through the images that we have in the book. It's a real honour to be able to do that, and it's really a task that you could only do in collaboration with other people. So we see this as our taonga to the world. We hope that it inspires others. It might even inspire them to write their own art histories as well. We see ourselves as very much one generation in a journey of writers and documenters of Māori art.
That was Sophia speaking to the University of Auckland's Professor Deirdre Brown, Ngā Pui, Ngā Tikahu, about Toi Te Mana, an Indigenous History of Māori Art, available now at your local bookstore.